Hey, what's good? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where we hit work and money with a millennial twist and strive not to bore you to sleep.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PayBalances and on Facebook and SoundCloud at Paychecks and Balances.
And if you're interested in having your side hustle or business promoted on a podcast without breaking the bank, visit paychecksandbalances.com/small business. We're giving you the chance to reach thousands of smart and engaged listeners, and we'll actually have our first one later on this episode.
And if you've been enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe and give us 5 stars in iTunes. If you're not sure how, visit paychecksandbalances.com/review.
There it is. This is also our anniversary episode for the podcast, man. It's already been a year, which is pretty crazy. So I know that you have kind of Money Minute, the anniversary edition, so we can jump into that. But any thoughts before we formally commence the segment, good brother?
Yeah, my original thought was I was about to break into Tony Tone. It's our anniversary. But then I realized like that might be like overly romantic and awkward. So I just sat here in awkward silence while you did the introduction. So that was my first thought. And I actually think that was a good decision not to sing that serenade.
I appreciate it.
So my second thought would be, I guess it's, you know, back to the days go slow, years go fast. It's surprising to me that it's already been a year, 12 months, which also then made me have the aha moment that we're 3 months into 2017. And I'm on a pretty good pace as I lean back and look at the vision board to hit the goals for this year. But it's interesting.
I don't know
another way to describe it. Like, it's just the pace at which life moves now is fascinating to me, because I think what it was is, so when the new year started, I was basically stretched too thin. I was going through the executive leadership program. I was in that 10-week coding program as it relates to General Assembly, which I still need to talk about on the show. I just reminded myself, and now I'm reminding the listeners. And so everything was just moving fast. I'm going to work. I'm trying to get these reports out because we do reports by each quarter. And I really didn't have time to sit back and reflect. And I talked about the privilege of reflection and even having the time to do so. So then I just hit this like immediate stopping point. Like, the certification program ended in January. I graduated from the executive leadership program in February. And so now it's like I have, I wouldn't say a lot of time, but I have more time on my hands, and I'm trying to make purposeful, self-directed decisions going forward to make this year be great. You know, trying to practice what I preach as far as it, and actually in relation to that. Now, hopefully this doesn't end up like the, what am I going to call that? China Gate, the infamous Facebook sponsorship thing. But another Facebook, I guess I haven't learned my lesson, ad came up. It seemed appropriately targeted, but I forget his name. I want to say his name is Draymond, but the shark from Shark Tank guy, FUBU creator.
Damon John.
Damon.
Well, there we go.
Yeah, that was a little. Anyway, Damon. Anyway. He'll be in Austin, and there was an ad on Facebook, so I'm going to go see him on March 18th, and he's speaking about entrepreneurship. So, allegedly, I might get there, and it might be some guy from Russia.
Gotcha. I was about to say that with the story you told about the, it wasn't supposed to be a poster, but it arrived as a poster.
Exactly, based on my prior experience with Facebook ads, but I'm going to give him one more chance. So, you know, again, I think it's just making purposeful, 1 week at a time, decisions to make myself better. So if he does show up there, even if it is for 5 minutes to maybe do a cameo, hopefully I will learn something that will make me be a better individual.
Yeah, I hope you don't show up and it's secretly a timeshare presentation, and it really is someone named Draymond Bond or something else. And it turns out you were totally swindled.
It probably is.
But anyway, getting into the Money Minute, or I guess we were kind of already there.
Yeah, I'd say this is the Money Minute anniversary edition. So I was kind of reflecting back on what these last 12 months have done for me, or that I've gone through as a part of the show or because of the show. And I think what the show has done, as I walk through these topics each week and I'm reading all these articles and I'm making these purposeful decisions with my personal finance, is it's just making me more focused on my budget and debt-free discipline. And it's really, I think my aha or coming to heart moment was, and we talked about this off the show, but it kind of felt like when I wrote the book, Debt Free or Die Trying, for new listeners, is that was more like a memoir. Like, it's more like, here's what I did, do as I say, not as I did type of thing. It's a cautionary tale, if you will, of how you can be extremely irresponsible for a whole decade, a significant period of your life, and yet still turn it around with what is scary, very little and discipline focused. Like, I think I was, and I've been thinking back over this as I've been asking questions, and I'm now trying to develop a course around this program because, you know, trying to teach others on the back end on how to get out of debt. And it's more, I was probably actively trying to get out of debt since age 22. So I graduated college at 22. And yeah, I started making payments on my credit cards and my school loans. And I had like this nebulous or non-existent plan. And it, I think originally I just said, I'm going to get out of debt at 25. I don't know why. It just sounded good. It's just something I made up. And I had no plan. I put nothing, no substantive evidence behind how I was going to achieve this goal. I just, like, I don't know, through unicorns and rainbows, thought it would happen because I declared it. And then when I got to 25 and went out of debt, I just moved it to 28. I didn't change anything. I didn't make any new additional like plans. I just said, I'm gonna get out of debt at 28 because that also sounded good. But when I kind of look back and I really started making a purposeful, like, here's my plan. And I set up a plan. I used Bankrate at the time. I went and got a debt calculator and made the sacrifices necessary as far as cutting back on my budget and living below my means to actually achieve the plan. Like, I'm going to achieve it. I'm going to be debt free or die trying. It's about 3 years. So I basically spent 7 years like haphazardly dancing around. I feel like if it was a movie scene, I'd be like dancing around in a field of dandelions, like spinning in circles in slow motion. Like, and that was my debt-free plan. And then somebody like walked up and said, you know, if you want to get to the city, why don't you follow the yellow brick road? And then it took me 3 years. So it's just, it's funny to me that when you are purposeful and then you are directed and you are making actual evidence-based, if you will, or factual, or even really common sense decisions, like, it doesn't really take that long. I think we get overwhelmed with, you know, I'll be in debt forever and I'll never get out and I don't know where to start. And, you know, the start of the journey is the start of the journey.
Yeah.
And I think just taking a step back, and what I'm, as I'm kind of trying to write this book in my head, or I wouldn't even say book, this course in my head, I'm kind of trying to think of how could I teach someone about how to go about doing this. And what I think I've come to realize is it's first a choice, which is a first and noble step in the right direction. But more importantly, it's sticking to it and staying disciplined about doing it for months, years, if necessary, at a time. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a very disciplined, and it doesn't seem like it, but it's a short-term sacrifice. I think people are like, cut off cable, you know, like, and I'm not saying like cut off cable and live without cable for the rest of your known life and know your grandchildren shall never see Nickelodeon nor speak the words Nickelodeon in the house. Like, that's not what I'm saying. I'm simply saying, okay, when people tell me they want to get out of debt, and they want to create a budget and they want to be debt free at, you know, 25, 30, 35, 40, or they want to put their kids through college. I would consider my branding to be very unsympathetic, yet highly empathetic. And being that, you know, are you making all the sacrifices that you can? And most people can't even answer yes to that if they're being honest. Like, I mean, my first question is going to be like, what are all the luxuries or nice things that you have right now? And do you need them? And that seems like a simple question, but I think we, in a lowercase or big case in millennials, which will make sense to individuals in due time. I do think, I don't want to call it entitled because I'm biased, but I do think we greatly confuse what we need. And we spend a lot of money on what we want and we call it a need.
Yeah. I've definitely been there.
Yeah. And that would be fine. I mean, you know, I want people to have nice things. I like iPhone too. But when I can definitely attest to this because I had a BlackBerry and I had it for a long time. They were on the third version of the iPhone before I switched from BlackBerry. So I can say that while I like nice things, that new iPhone just wasn't in the budget for me. I'm like, man, that thing looks awesome. It does great things. And like, man, it seems like a cool smartphone. But like, that's not a part of my plan right now. Because I've got this other thing that I need to achieve. And that happened to be getting out of debt. And then, yeah, after I got out of debt, you know, well, I think now I got an iPhone 6 Plus. But I don't know if it's because I'm older or having gone through that exercise, but I don't need the 7. Like when I look at what the 7 offers, I'm like, that's not enough to push me over on a just because I'm gonna go out and buy the newest thing whim. Like there's other things that I could be doing with that money. There are better ways that I could allocate that. If anything specific to that iPhone, I only just paid it off like 4 months ago because I was on that like sign your soul and DNA and firstborn child payment plan for the iPhone 6. I only paid it off like 4 months ago. So I want to get some kind of benefit out of the phone. Technically, I've been paying for it this whole time.
It's actually been in some ways.
Yeah, it's been on loan to me is what I was going to say. My own phone was on loan to me for, I think it was like a 36-month payment plan. So I want to get maybe 12 months of like free phone benefit out of this phone.
Yo, I've never...
And to put that in... Go ahead.
Yeah, I've never gotten into the, oh, new phone just came out. Must immediately turn this one in, pay more money, and upgrade to that new phone. Like, I don't know. That was never me. Like, the idea of hanging on to a phone for a year and then immediately upgrading over and over. I mean, I guess if you have the money, go for it. But I know a lot of people who weren't necessarily that far along the balling spectrum who would be the first ones like, oh, new iPhone is out. I got to go cop that. Almost like they're Jordans.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm not judging. Like, I've never tried to put myself. It's your money. You do whatever you want with your money. But to your point, if you tell me that, you know what, man, I want to be debt free and I want to be in this place in
that's
5 years. Yeah. I'm like, well, it sounds like you're in direct conflict with the other goal that you just told me that you wanted to achieve. And people are going to be like, oh, it's just a phone. It's just a phone. But it's just a phone, which is representative of how you go about spending your money, because it's just a phone and it's just the shoes and it's just the new clothes. And then you've just spent $6,000 this year. And it's like, well, at some point, it's not just it is not a good investment anymore. And as I talked about on the lifestyle inflation episode, which I looked up in relation to something else, which is episode 20, like those little... We keep saying, oh, it's just this, it's just that. And all those little small purchases add up, especially when you look at it over the year. So my payment plan was like $30 a month. I think it was $34 to be exact. So that's $360 I was spending every year on a phone that I already had but did not own.
Damn.
Yeah, that's not a good decision to be making with the money that I could have been spending in other places. And it was an impulse buy. I just wanted the bigger, glowier, nicer phone.
Yeah, I'm definitely trying to keep, because I'm on a payment plan for this phone that I have now, and I'm in no hurry to get rid of it. Even if I pay it off in advance, I'll probably still hang on to the phone for at least another year or two. It's just not a priority for me to have the newest and shiniest phone. And yeah, you know, I don't judge how people spend their money, but kind of like what you said, when people talk about having goals that are just like, man, I just can't seem to save. And it's like, well, you might be able to save if you would stop re-upping every 12 months on something that's working perfectly fine. You know, and of course, a phone isn't the same scale as a car, but it's a similar idea when people really need to just stop and think, do I really need to have this right now? Considering the bigger picture, all of the goals I have, everything that I said I wanted to accomplish, do I really need to spend this $300, $400, $700, whatever it is right now when I could probably be fine for another 1 to 2 years?
Yeah. And another thing in relation to, but probably more like correlated to the show is just coming of age as well, being on the older side of the millennial scale. It almost feels like I'm an age out of the millennial scale, but I think hopefully it'll continue to move with me. But from age 18 to 34, in that range of millennials, another thing that I don't think we probably give as much observation to is the what we face. And so I'm sticking with this phone analogy, if you will. I remember when they came out with that 36-month payment plan, it used to be you'd sign up for a 2-year contract and your phone was free. And so we're just faced with these different optional dilemmas and payment plans, and they continue to come up with new ways to get at our money. And so I ran out there and I'm like, oh, now I don't have to sign a 2-year contract, but yet I'm paying for a phone for 3 years. So who really won here?
I mean, of course they won. That's the whole point.
Yeah. And, you know, it's just it's compiled, and, you know, the credit cards. And I think, you know, capitalism has always been around, but that more in your face capitalism. Like, I think actually I know this is the first generation that had their purchasing power of a credit card that we had since age 18. Like, I had the ability to buy, I think my first credit card was a few thousand. I had the ability at age 18 to go out and spend thousands of dollars in money that I did not have. Yeah. And I feel like that's generationally specific, and that's fine. But I feel like we're getting to a point where I used to be able to make excuses like, you know, I got taken advantage of. I didn't know about the consolidation loan, and I can't believe they mailed me a check, and, you know, the $5,000 Frisbee and the $10,000 T-shirt. And that's I can no longer plead that type of ignorance anymore. Like, yes, you know, it might have been introduced in this generation. But now if I had it at 18, I've almost had 18 more years to learn how to use it. And so, and I have access to several unlimited mechanisms for finding out, even if I have to teach myself.
And there's so much information out there. There's so many apps. And so I know you're a paper pen whiteboard type of lad, fellow. Those are both extremely outdated terms, but I'm gonna go with it. And
like, you know what? Lad isn't used enough. I'm impressed, Rich. I'm impressed.
I'm like, yeah, that was definitely old English and not the malt liquor. That's definitely like 1800s wearing tight pants and speaking extra proper. But I'm going to go with it, though. I'm going to go with it. In fact, I don't even remember what I was going to say after that, so I'm going to turn it back to you.
Well, I just think I'm getting to the point I was driving home as far as this anniversary and Money Minute goes is, you know, we can, and I actually encourage some of us on the younger side of the scale to continue to do so, to plead that ignorance. And I think that's why you listen to these types of shows and why you tune into these podcasts and these apps, this Mint and this Level Money and these things that we've recommended. But it gets to a point where, what's the saying of, you know, you're old enough to know better, but young enough to do it anyway. Like, I'm getting to the point where I'm old enough to know better, and people are going to start judging if I do it anyway. Yeah. And so I'm just trying to make, not only for myself, because it'd be hypocritical to another episode we had where I'm trying to do it for others, you know, do it for yourself as well. But I'm getting to a point where, like, I can't blame anyone else anymore. Like, I can't point fingers at other individuals for the decisions that I'm making, personal finance or otherwise.
Nah. And it just came back to me. The whole point was that there's so much information out there. And of course, people who are listening to podcasts like this, they know that. But for, you know, folks that are much newer to the space, it's kind of like, yo, there's so much information, and people often don't look it up, or they say they don't know where to find it. And with a quick Google search, you can turn up some pretty simple and easy to use formula strategies for managing money, whatever else it is. And so for myself, I'm with you on the excuses piece, because there's things now where before I'd be like, oh man, this thing is blocking me from doing this. And I've been trying to do this thing for years and it's not working. I just can't get there. And the only common variable through all of those scenarios has been me. And so at some point you do have to take that accountability and say, yo, if I really want to create this change, I need to make some serious changes myself, instead of waiting for the situation to be right or waiting for someone else to do something. What can I do today? What tools can I use to help me get there? What, you know, strategies can I start implementing? And I know you mentioned on the one episode about doing one thing per week, and that's 52 improvements over the course of a year. What's that one thing I can start doing every week to help move me closer to whatever that financial or professional goal is? And it's something that it seems easy to apply, but then it's also so easy to make excuses and blame it on environmental factors, other variables, stuff that maybe you don't have as much control of, but what about the things that you do?
And I'm reminded of, a few things actually. So you said something there as far as, you know, there is an information, you almost could describe it as information overload. And we've talked about the paralysis by analysis. I had to make sure that I got it correctly. And I think I did. But, you know, information is great. And the example that I've used on a previous show is Mint. So I pretty much use Mint probably quarterly. I use it to check my credit score. It's just the app that I use to check my credit score. It's not that I'm, you know, biased towards Mint for any reason. It's just coincidentally the one that I had first, and it offers enough for me. But action is better. So I think a lot of present company included, like, we're guilty of, well, I have Mint on my phone, and I'm like, that's not a budget. You have a tool that budgets, but you do not have a budget. And so
that is a critical distinction.
That's like, yeah, if a budget falls in a forest, does it make a sound? Like, I think you download Mint, you set up all the reminders, you set up all the budget, and you violate it every month, or you never check in. Like, that's not a budget. If you're using it to monitor how you spend your money month to month, and you actually are using the budget tools available within Mint. And the reason I do use the pen and paper is it doesn't allow me the excuse that sometimes the app does, because if I know I was irresponsible that month, I'm like, I'm just not going to open that app, because all it's going to show is a bunch of red. And I don't want to see that. Like, I don't want to see that this month. Yeah, I don't need this pressure in my life. But then I didn't budget that month. So what I do now, and it partially is because the job that I have now, I get paid once a month, is I still, and it's actually one of the most helpful tools I have. It's a little calendar that I bought. I think I got it from Walmart. It's a whiteboard that I fill out each month, and I put every bill on there. And then on the second, I pay every bill in the month, including allocating how I'm going to put my retirement savings. And what this does or has done for me is now the 3rd through the 31st, I can budget and I can do 80-20 and 60-40 and any other number of budget allocations. And I'm actually going to talk about where you can see some of those. But at the end of the day, what it boils down to is when that number gets to zero, I'm out of money. Whereas before, I could create this illusion of like, oh, I'm just going to mail the check on the first, and then hopefully they won't cash it until the second. I'm going to pay this bill. Oh, it's due on the 15th. I'm going to pay it on the 14th at 11:59. Or PM. I create this illusion of budget and money that was really like gray math, like ghost math. Like I'm actually just kind of fooling myself. Whereas now, like I said, when that dollar, and I can track it, like, it's very simple because I know all the bills are paid. So if I'm at the 15th of the month and I'm through 70% of the money, I need to slow down. Like, there's no illusions left. There's no, like, all that's left in this little, and it's, you know, you can do this in any number of ways. You know, Dave Ramsey speaks about the envelope system. There's the 80-20 budget. There's a 70-30 budget. There's a 60-40 budget. However you go about doing it, what I'm trying to drive home is not only finding the tool that is convenient, but finding the tool that that works for you and you're actually going to use, even if that is pen and paper.
Boom.
And if you need help, you can visit debtfreeordietrying.com/budget for a tool that I created that is free. And I want to talk about a little bit as far as the anniversary goes, something else that has helped me with the show. And so what will be coming out next from my side and coordination with the show is I want to develop in some capacity a debt-free course that basically step by step teaches people these lessons that I learned the hard way. And it'll probably be a course that I roll out, and then it'll be version one, version two, as I get feedback from individuals and listeners like you, no PBS, and continue to grow this Paychecks and Balances brand, spread our wings and fly.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot on the agenda for what we want to accomplish with the podcast. I'm sure people are going to be very excited about the idea of a course. I think you'll have a winner there when it's ready.
And then another thing that I've been thinking about as it relates to, you know, my I'm even hesitant to say it, but I think I need to just start embracing my brand. And I kind of, you know, in talking with all these different guests, and which is very helpful, and just seeing how people come to the end and the journey they've taken. Usually, I wouldn't say haphazardly, but it's just funny to me how most folks are like, well, I didn't start out to be, and now I am. And I feel like in some ways we're in that same capacity. But I was thinking about when we were doing the Nerd Wallet interview, and I'm not sure, I want to talk about this on the show, but I don't think I'll talk about it specifically on this one. But she was asking about, you know, how did your budget philosophy come to be? And I was kind of thinking back on that as I'm putting this course together. I go back to the sympathetic versus supportive. And like most individuals, I think it comes from, you know, the nurture nature, but the home, of course. And when I look back at all the endeavors, and there was a lot, I was always just trying to get into some quick get rich quick scheme, you know, selling knives door to door. I thought I was going to put the industry on the ear. I had three jobs. I put computers together. I worked night shifts at a hotel, which was the interesting one week, most interesting one week job of my life.
Wait. You had the job for 1 week?
I had the job for 1 week. First of all, I was getting a little bit older. This was back when I was always working two or three jobs. It's just something I did. And I thought in my head that I could work Monday through Friday, a 9 to 5, and then I'd work night shifts Saturday and Sunday. And by a couple weeks in, I was about to go insane because I wasn't getting any sleep, because trying to switch your rhythmic schedule from night shift to day shift, which people do, like, and it's very impressive. I couldn't do it, but it was still the most interesting 1 week in totality. So I worked weekends, so it's probably like a month experience of my life.
I thought you literally went in like 1 or 2 days, and then that was just the job. You were just like, nah. Not over the course of several weeks, you would work a day or a night.
Yeah, over the course of several weeks, I worked, and I actually had a pretty interesting coworker too, which also added to the interesting experience. I'd work night shift weekends. So I'd come in, I think it was like 8 on a Friday, and I'd work until 8 a.m. on that next Saturday.
Nah.
And then I'd come in again at 8 p.m. at Saturday night, and then, you know, get off at 8 on Sunday. And in my head, I thought I was going to just roll into work and start working day shifts. Then it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, that's pretty reckless. I mean, maybe. Yeah. So on one hand, it's responsible because you're working extra jobs to make extra money to save, pay off bills. But on the sleep budget, probably a little reckless.
And that's my point. You know, as I think back and I look back at all this, and I'll briefly at least speak to the car story if I don't tell the full story right now. You know, through all that, it's funny now looking back, like what my parents must have thought of this insanity. Like, you know, what is our son doing with his life? Like, and but through all that, they were always supportive. I told them I was going to work three jobs. They're like, all right, whatever. You know, does it cost us anything? All right, cool. Go ahead. I tell them I'm going to work 10 jobs. They're like, all right, whatever. I tell them I got a get rich scheme. I'm like, man, I'm about to, you know, I'm going to sell checking accounts. And all you got to do is give me your routing number. You know, whatever. They're like, whatever is it? Long as it doesn't cost us any money and it's not illegal, we fully support you. And when it inevitably crashed, and I was usually broke at the end, their support structure was, we'll support you through anything, but we will be unsympathetic to very little things. And that it always came back to, I would try to point fingers and blame, and such took, and I lost my money here and there, and that was unfair. And then they would just always ask, like, well, wasn't that your decision? Well, didn't you choose to? Wasn't that on you? Because, and so I now realize as I'm older, a lot of it fostered a personal accountability that I don't always see across the board. Usually when something goes wrong, my first step is, how did I get myself here? You know, how did I contribute to this? How much of this is my fault? And so I realized that comes across in how I write and how I read. Because some people are like, man, you're kind of on the Richard side of things. And I'm like, well, did you not make the choice? Isn't it? At the end of the day, it's your fault. And I actually found myself, I don't know if you do this, I think inevitably everyone turns into their parents, but I found myself quoting my father recently, who used to always say this to me. Like many quotes, it didn't make much sense at the time, but it's not your fault, but it is your problem. He used to say it all the time. My friends would do something. Yeah, my friends would do something. They'd break something I had nothing to do with, other than like inviting them in, or, and you know, he'd be like, "Hey, it's not your fault, but it is your problem." And he was right. It was my problem. It was always my problem. So that's kind of where I start at. So even at the end of the day, if it isn't your fault, and there is times where you'll get into debt and you will make purchases that are truly not your fault. And I'm actually, those are the times when I am sympathetic. I'm like, that is a truly unfortunate situation that has arrived. And we can distill and roll around in that point for a period of time, but the problem will still be there waiting for us. So I'm going to have to say, it's not your fault, but it is your problem. And I hope that instead we can be a small part or a large part in helping you solve and resolve it.
I hope so. Given all these hours and ramblings and thoughts, I hope people are getting some value from it, which it seems they are, you know, given the reviews and stuff like that. So we definitely want to keep that going in the 2017. Anything else you wanted to reflect on, good brother?
So I'll hold the what will be called the remote control car money minute. It was highlighted in the NerdWallet story, which was in the newsletter, but it actually was actually in the show notes. So if you go back and look in the show notes in the announcement section, you could read the NerdWallet article. I speak a little bit about that, but I'm going to expand on that topic more about how I maybe spent my whole life chasing after remote control cars. But for now, that'll conclude. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I look forward to that.
That'll conclude this week's Money Minute. And if you have a question that needs answering, don't forget to comment on the website or email us at info@paychecksandbalances.com.
Cool. So for this week in work, it's kind of reflective. It ties to some of what you were talking about, calling this checkpoints and levels, which deals with the whole goal side of things along with some other pieces. And so we have talked a lot about goals lately, which had me thinking about checkpoints in life. And so I know I've mentioned I've had this looming feeling of not being where I'm supposed to be. And I talked about this internal crisis on episode 41, which a lot of people responded to. I thought it was just going to be like, okay, you spent this time reflecting and going through your struggles, but people enjoyed hearing that they're not alone. But at the same time, though, I've had this feeling of, you know, I'm not where I should be. I have been able to stop and appreciate the progress, though it's not always happening as fast as I'd like. And so I've kind of learned that no matter where you are, you're right where you're supposed to be. You know, it may not feel like that in the moment. It usually doesn't feel like that in the moment until you're winning or having some major success. And you're like, yes, finally, I'm here. I'm arrived. But even through all of the challenges that we face, you're supposed to be facing them for whatever reason, because somewhere down the road, those challenges and those obstacles are going to make you better, and you'll have. And I know, I'm not sure about you, but I've had moments where something that really sucked at the time, I get through it. And then later on, something else comes up. And the fact that I went through that really sucky time helps me navigate around something that could have been an even suckier time.
Yeah, definitely. I think just even having that experience from going through the first time that sucked makes the next time that sucked easier. Because I'm like, well, at least I survived that first sucky experience. So even if it makes this experience no more better or easier, I know I can get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like that. What doesn't kill you makes you. What is it? What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. Is that how that goes?
I think so.
Yeah. Something like that. And I know a lot of us, we tend to observe and admire the moves of people that seem to be blowing up or are more successful. And it isn't about making comparisons, but there's just people who are like, yo, this person is really killing it out there. You know, I want to do something similar. I want to carve a path the way that they did. And I've mentioned before that there are a lot of commonalities across these folks. And so, for example, online, as far as checkpoints go and what you see with people who are becoming increasingly successful, it usually starts with them getting mentioned on smaller sites. Now, of course, they're usually writing or podcasting, or they're putting some type of content out there already for themselves. But then you start seeing them get featured on smaller sites, and then those sites become larger. And then you start seeing that they're public speaking, and then they're getting featured in major publications. Then comes a book, TV, or media deal. It happens all the time. There's a lot of people in our peer group back from the blogging days who are starting to see that now, where they've went through these different phases, and now things, at least as far as what the public sees, it appears that they've suddenly taken off, but it's been a multi-year journey. Offline at work, it may look a little bit different. We see people get increasing levels of responsibility and they start becoming more visible. They start leading meetings and working with more teams across the company. Maybe they start sitting on panels where someone has asked a representative from the company to come speak on a particular topic. In the financial space, it's harder to know how someone is doing financially to see what those checkpoints are, but I'm sure they're there. And I'd venture to say that a lot of them are probably tied to those professional and entrepreneurial moves that that they're making. And I think about even for myself, I know Bubukins told me a few years ago when I was super worried about money that things would only get better. And at the time, I couldn't see it. You know, I'm like, man, you know, I got this debt, don't have as much money in savings as I would like. We're moving. All these other things are going on. What if one bad thing comes up? Are we going to be living out on the streets? And over the course of a few years, things have gotten a lot better. So, you know, going from having personal credit card debt and not much in savings, despite having a decent salary, to now not having personal credit card debt and almost having 3 months of life savings plus an emergency fund that could cover up to 2K of BS. And a lot of that, it's been just through focused, consistent effort and having some goals and checkpoints in mind. And I know I've said I don't think in terms of, you know, where exactly I want to be in 5 years, but I do think about where I want to be in 12 months. And I have gotten out as far as 24 months. And being able to think that way, it has allowed me to appreciate the various checkpoints where I'm like, okay, boom, I have an emergency fund saved. Great.
So we've talked a few times. I just want to ask a quick question about where you want to be, or we want to be, or anyone in 3 to 5 years. Have you also thought about it in the inverse of, okay, here's why I don't want to be? So, you know, kind of to remove the remaining static.
Yeah. And that's what I kind of felt 2 to 3 years ago when she was like, things will get better. And I'm like, no, they won't. Like that, I don't want to be back at that point where I'm working and everyone thinks that I'm doing really well, but then internally I'm feeling this turmoil and like things could fall apart at any moment in time. And I don't want to go back to that. And that's part of what's allowed me to really turn up on the savings front.
Well, that's interesting to me because, and maybe because I am externally, and I don't know how much of that is millennial age or everyone as far as falling under that umbrella. But do you think that's self-imposed? Because externally, it looked like you were doing fine. If anything, it looked like you were doing great. You know, you were making moves, you're moving around the country, sounded like you were continuing to move up in your professional life. Do you think it was self-imposed worries, or now that you're looking back, were they genuine?
I think it's a little bit of both. I just tend to be, I realize in some ways when it comes to money and not, and non-political things, I tend to be very conservative and risk averse in some ways. And I know in the confines of, confines sounds so jail. That's really not the way I want to describe the relationship because it is wonderful and amazing and all those other positive things. But within the, relationship, you know, I've always just kind of been like, oh, we need to think about this. And she's kind of like, let's go travel. Let's go explore the world. She's the free spirit. I'm the one who's like, nah, we need to think about 1 month, 2 month, 3 month, 6 months out, whatever it is. And I've just always been that way. But, you know, I guess as I look back, I probably could have been easier on myself about some of those stresses. You know, I probably could have, I won't say be less ambitious, but really appreciated some of the checkpoints that I can appreciate now. I probably could have appreciated those more back then. And I think if you talk to anyone who's rising up and it appears that they're doing extremely well, they have these things that they're worried about, but they just don't voice them on social media or anywhere like that. And that's actually an interesting lesson that I've gotten about successful people is even when they're going through it, of course, and I think what happens is we hear all of this stuff about authenticity and be relatable and you got to share the journey. But a lot of times with the people who are really progressing along, you don't hear about those failures while they're in it. It's usually in reflection looking back. You primarily hear about the good things that are happening for them. You see the features, you see them speaking on stages, but you don't hear about the struggle until they've already gotten to that next level, whatever it is. And, you know, I've probably been living and just showcasing highlights, but also spending some time talking about the challenges while in the moment. And I think everyone has them, but not everyone talks about them. So that's probably what I would say on that.
Okay.
And then I know as it relates to the podcast specifically, it feels like there's checkpoints that we're starting to hit on the continuum. And to some people, 2-3 years, that feels like a really, really long time when it's something that you're thinking about daily. But in the grand scheme of life, it's not that long. I even think about, you know, how quickly these past 3 years have gone by. You know, I'm almost approaching being in California for 3 years in a few months. Like, that time flew past. But when we moved out here and I was still stressing about some stuff, I'm like, oh man, like I couldn't see the light at the end of the tunnel. But looking back and being like, wow, so much has happened and changed in a positive way over the past 3 years, it really wasn't that much time at all.
Yeah, and I can give people a frame of reference for that. But I think what will help me, and I was maintaining it for a while, is I had a list that I kept in my phone originally, and I really just broke it down between short-term and long-term goals so that usually on the weekend, by the time Saturday rolls around, I'd look at, so short-term would be something I'm trying to accomplish literally that weekend. I didn't always hit them all. It'd usually be a list of like 3 to 5 things. And then long-term would be 3, 6, 9 months, something I want to accomplish this year. So like long term, maybe like my 3 to 5 year plan, the courses that I wanted to develop in the summer, at least when I started the list. But now that started, and I had move it around. So as I start to work through the short term list, usually would be something complementary to getting me to the long term goals. But as far as looking at those timelines, and the reason that was helpful for me, and, you know, it's old school, but the whole whiteboard thing, the reason why it's helpful for me, and it really helped me last year, is when I started using the whiteboard, I wrote out what I wanted to accomplish each year. I broke it down by like some silos. So there was professionally, there was paychecks and balances. And then there was, at that time, and that's actually an example, there was debt-free or die trying, which was just a concept. So on my list was write book, develop website, put book out, develop resources pages. And all those things have been accomplished since then. And what I would do, I wrote it, what I wanted to accomplish in black. When I accomplished it, if it was high level, I put it in red, like a high priority. And when I got it done, I checked it off in green. And then at the end of that year, I took a picture of that and I sat down. And I mean, it's really easy to get caught up in the day to day as well. It's like, wow, I accomplished a lot this year. This entire list, the whole debt-free or die-trying list that I had, got accomplished. I had to create a whole new list. And I talked to you a little bit about this offline. It's like, I hit all the high level goals that I want to hit for this year. I got to come up with new goals. And that's when I kind of sat back and said, okay, what can I do at work? Okay, let me look into this executive leadership program. I'm looking into data analysis. So let me see what data analysis programs could help me. Shout out to our listener. I don't have his at name memorized, but I put that out there, which is funny because that's usually not my style. I usually put the accomplishment out, not the goal. And one of our listeners who's been around for a while reached out and said, hey, have you thought about enrolling in this program? And he saved me like $10,000 because I ultimately did go into that program. And it helped me become better, more knowledgeable, and make several other decisions that I would not have otherwise made but for going to that program, which goes back to those key points that we hit all the time as far as networking and exploring your network and ensuring that you have positive people in your life who want to see you do better. I mean, this is just an individual that's been following us for years. It's like, hey, I can help you with that. I've done that exact thing. And I have several friends who have done this exact same. Go to this link, read in it, hope it helps. And it did. But as far as time, because I know depending where you fall on the scale, that's going to sound crazy to some people. 2 to 3 years, that's forever. And what I would say is, if you're in college, even probably if you're a freshman, but if you're in college, think about the last time you thought about high school. And even the last time you thought about high school, think about the last time it had an impactful decision on your life. So you might have reflected on it. Maybe an anniversary came up or somebody's notice on Facebook came up that you've known from high school for a long time. But think about something that happened in 9th grade, which might take a while itself. And think about the impact that it's having on your life today. And at that time, it probably seemed like the end of the world. You'll never move beyond this. This is 9th grade. No one understands my plight. I'm 16. And if you're in college or you graduated from college, and it doesn't even have to be college, just think back 4 years to something you thought that you would never get over, that would be make or break, that life would never move forward from this point. And then, but for this conversation that I'm forcing you to have right now, so hopefully I am not pouring salt into the wound, when's the last time you thought about it? And I mean, that's what I'm talking about.
On Facebook when I got a memory.
Exactly. Yeah, forced to, like this conversation we're having right now. But I can tell you right now, and it was funny because when we were going through our round of hiring and I was looking at applicants and, you know, when they had gone to school and what they were focusing on their master's. And at one point, I was trying to come up with some questions that we could ask individuals during the panel interview. And I could not remember college for the life of me. Like, I couldn't tell you what I was doing in college. Like, my frame of reference is I have to go, okay, all right, how old was I at that time? Okay, what was I roughly doing? All right, hold on. Let me look at my resume so I can see where I was working. Like, I have to go through this whole exercise. I can't, like, readily recall what I was doing at age 21, 19, and how it impacted me today. And I say all that because when you're going through it, it always seems like forever. That's why I like to go to the days go slow, years go fast. But once you're on the other side of it, it'll seem like a blip. Like Rich knows when I was going through those courses, like I thought it was in the world. Like, man, I'm overwhelmed. I can't do anything. He's like, hey, man, can you add a period to that? And instead, Rich, I'm on the end. I'm on the edge. I don't have time to be putting periods on sentences. Like when you're going through it, it always seems chaotic and hectic because it is, but it's the recency of it. And then when you get to the other side, it's like, huh, I can't believe how quickly that went by. Like, I was in that executive program for 10 months. It feels like I started yesterday.
Yeah.
But while I was going through it, I was like, man, I'll never get to the end of it. It always feels like you'll never get to the end of it until you get to the end of it. And you'll never start that journey unless you put your head down and say, here's what I'm going to do. And this is what I'm going to do for 3 months. And then the 6 months after that, and the 9 months after that, and the 12 months after that, the 18 after that, and now 24, 36, et cetera. And if you break it down into those 3 month buckets, that's actually another point. Like, how, you know, 3 months is easy. Ah, just 3 months, 90 days, piece of cake. And just take it 90 days at a time.
Yeah.
And you'll be surprised how quickly that time will pass, the accomplishments that you will reach. And that's why I think it's important, and probably maybe even more so for millennials, because I do think, whether we like it or not, I'm trying to own this about myself. There are certain things that I hate to admit, but I do like, and I think it is just the nature of the environment in which we came in. But I do need to see that list. I need to see that list of 10, and I need to see those 10 things checked off, or 7 out of 10, and I hit 70% or 80% or 90%. I do need to see that. And so whatever means or mechanism I'm going to use for a medium for seeing that, I do it. I mean, I just need to get over that part of me. Like, I'm going to make a list. I'm going to check it twice. And then I go back and I reflect on it. And then I can say, okay, it's real easy to be dismissive of what you do throughout the year as well. Like for us, we are coming up on episode 44. I don't remember episode 1 through 43. I barely remember. I will not remember this conversation we're having right now. If I get off this Skype call that we use to record this podcast and someone said, hey, what did you talk about on the podcast? You know, I'm telling that someone. Look at the notes. Because I don't know. It's so you have to capture it and then reflect back on it and then make those positive changes that are necessary.
Yeah. And that's a good segue to what I was going to mention after this. But before I jump to that next point, I just want to remind people of the importance of creating checkpoints. You know, you could look at people that you admire, who you've been following for some time, and you can probably attach some time periods. It may not be apples to apples per se, but what are those checkpoints that you're going to come up with for yourself throughout the year that you'll be able to appreciate hitting as you attain them? Also, I'm in the midst of one of the performance review cycles at work. And I've also started working on kind of a personal performance review. So I don't have this dope format to tell people about, but I'm like, yo, if I'm reflecting on what I've accomplished at the day job, I'm also going to take some time to reflect on what I've accomplished in the past year. And in doing that, it does make me feel silly for some of the stuff that I've complained about. And it's also made me realize how impatient I've probably been about things. Because when I just think about things over the past year, more responsibility, now managing people, leading up diversity, stuff that's going on with the podcast, increasing in terms of scope and responsibility, some of the things I talked about earlier of what you see happen for people within companies as they've started to rise, I've started to experience those things. And of course, that has created some new challenges that I complain about, but I've had to stop, write it down, and look at why I'm now facing those new challenges. It's because I've accomplished a series of things along the way. And related to that, I've also been thinking a lot about the importance of time management, tools, systems. Shout out to Lisa Nicole Bell, who joined us on episode 26, which is probably one of our top two episodes of the whole Paychecks and Balances podcast, at least in terms of the response it got. And she actually, I think when I was listening to her podcast, she had initially mentioned Trello. I believe it was Trello like a long time ago. And it's basically a project management tool. You drop things into buckets. Fam, how would you describe Trello as someone that was resistant to it that is now like, all right, man, this is pretty cool?
That's simple, because we actually have a similar tool at work, and we got a board. We put sticky notes under headers, and we move the sticky notes as they moved across the project. If you could automate that electronically, that would be Trello.
Boom. That is way better than I would have. Actually, you described that in way fewer words than I was going to attempt to describe it. I'm glad I asked you that. And so we've been using that for the podcast, but I've also started using it for work, essentially to collect receipts. And I'm not talking about so I can submit an expense report. But the way I have mine set up, I have columns for things I want to get done, things that absolutely need to get done and are time sensitive, things that are in progress and waiting for a response, and things that are done. And a lot of times with post-it notes, we finish something, we cross it off, and then it's never to be seen again. But one thing I like about the Trello tool that I found particularly useful is that within each task, you can create checklists. And so there are things I find myself doing at work, like, for example, processing an offer for somebody, which may sound like a simple thing, like, okay, person interviews, people say yes, you generate an offer. But there's like 15 steps that I have to do every single time. And it's important that I can now capture it somewhere this way, because I've had weeks where I'm like, how did this week go by so quickly? I feel like I only got one thing done. And it's like, oh, if I had two people whose offers I need to process, that's where my time went. And even as I move stuff into the done bucket within the tool, that essentially becomes a repository for everything that I've done throughout the year, with the accompanying checklist or workflows for what needed to be done to accomplish those things. And I can already see how that's going to be helpful when the next performance review cycle comes around, because I'll have not just the names of projects and the high level pieces, I'll also have the in-depth details that I'll be able to speak to and be able to say, hey, you know, maybe I had 15 things you wanted me to accomplish over the last 6 months, but I only accomplished 10. Here's why, and break down what all of those pieces were that were involved. Because even in the process of tracking things in this tool, I'm realizing that there are some things that may seem simple on the surface, but when I really look at what it took to accomplish that thing, it's mad steps, man. Mad steps. I did want to jump to the micro mentions. And so y'all know how we've been talking about the opportunity for entrepreneurs and side hustlers to have their thing mentioned on the show. It comes in the form of a micro mention, which is a 140 character description of your thing that we'll read on the podcast and also tell people where to find you. Today we have our first submission from a fellow millennial who also happens to be a Pisces. Fish is up. I got to work on that. There's probably a better way to say that. At Candy Boo on Twitter, CandiiBoo. Also, happy birthday to her. And the micro mention reads, "But I'm Not a Critic" is a music blog that provides unique and positive perspectives to an evolving music society. New posts and updates weekly. The acronym for that, BINACT. You can find "But I'm Not a Critic" though at butimnotacriticthough.com. Nothing shortened or abbreviated. And you can also find it on Facebook at BINACTCJ. This will be in the show notes, so you'll be able to find that there. And so if you want to have your side hustle or project mentioned on the podcast, be sure to visit us at paychecksandbalances.com/small business. A good opportunity to have your stuff promoted on the show without breaking the bank. So again, check out, but I'm not a critic though.
Boom. Nice.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess we can hit the closeout from here. So it feels like this one went pretty quickly, even though it's already been some time. So I want to thank everyone for listening to this episode. Don't forget to join our email list where we share helpful stories we read throughout the week, actionable work and money tips, and more. And you can sign up by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email.
And if you support what we're doing, consider becoming a PNB patron. These are financial supporters of the podcast and enable us to create more and do more for you, the listener. To learn more, visit paychecksandbalances.com/patron. You can see a video of us, actually, and me in my hat because I failed to get a haircut that week.
Yeah, we should probably do another video. I was looking all like, hey, like in that still shot that's on there. And I'm like, I probably want to put something a little bit more fresh on there.
I have joined Beard Gang since that time. Hashtag Beard Gang.
Yes, so. Yes, you have. Actually, that's a good plug for Instagram. So we've started slowly incorporating videos into our Instagram feed at Pay Balances. I know the one you just did this past week was doing numbers for us. Yeah, you know,
I got a 90 views warning, which I didn't even know was a thing. So I guess I'm glad that it got over 90 views.
Yeah, I love how these platforms keep finding new ways to get us to open them up again. At first, it was like, hey, guess what? Your friend's on there. And I turned that notification off. And then it's like, hey, you've reached 50 views. And I'm like, okay, cool. I turned that off. Did you know you just reached 100? And I'm like,
you hit 51 views?
Yeah, it's getting pretty crazy with the notifications. I feel like I got to stay on top of that. But definitely also check us out on Instagram at Pay Balances. And again, thanks to everyone for listening to this anniversary episode. Until next time, be safe. We out. Peace.